Hi, you are listening to What's Your Problem podcast with Amy Ball. This first episode is an opportunity for you to learn a little bit more about me, where I come from, why I do what I do, and what you can expect to hear more of in the podcast in the future. I'm joined by Jake Wilkins from the Game Changer Training, who's going to be helping me by asking me some questions in this first episode. Welcome, Jake.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. I feel privileged to be the first person on your podcast.
You're welcome.
And even more so that I get to put you in the hot seat, first of all, and ask you the questions so the audience can know all about Amy and where this is going and where it comes from.
Thank you. I'm not quite sure whether I should be saying thank you yet, but we'll work that out later.
Yeah, cool. So obviously, people don't know where we are, where we've been so far. So let's start off from the very beginning. Tell us who you are right now, who you identify yourself as. Let's start there.
Okay, great. So I'm Amy Bull. I am the owner of a franchise or part of a franchise. So I have two gyms in that franchise. And I have a podcast now, apparently, this being the first episode. And I am also a trustee with Milton Keynes RSPCA.
Lovely. Okay, so now we need to reverse engineer that whole backstory. Mm-hmm. So we need to figure out how you've came from wherever you've come from to where you are now. And then we'll discuss all the problems in between, all of the hurdles, so that the viewers or the listeners out there can learn from this and be inspired on their journey, right? So Amy, take us all the way back as far as you wish to the very beginning. Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much. I was going to start with my first side hustle, but I actually think it probably goes back a little bit further than that. And to touch briefly on education. So I was probably a fairly average student, and I think my teachers would have said to my parents, oh, she's a genuine person, she's kind and helps people, but not very academic. And when we got to a point of doing A-levels, my parents, especially my dad, said to me, are you sure that's what you want to do? And at that time, it was the late 90s, there wasn't much other choice in terms of how you might do something. So there were a couple of apprenticeships that I could have gone into, but nothing that really kind of floated my boat. And when you did careers advice in those days, mm-hmm, I was told
I those.
The long questionnaires that you ticked mm-hmm. out in, not online, but in a nice pen and paper format. I was told that I could probably be a social worker.
Okay.
Which is quite interesting, but didn't really float my boat at that particular point. Did my A-levels, did not do very well. In fact, I entirely bombed. I think I graded one out of four subjects that I did.
So I find that really hard to believe, knowing you.
And I think that's, for me, at the time, it was a disaster. My world my world imploded, because that's what I was supposed to do. I was supposed to do my A-levels, be, you know, moderately successful. I wasn't expecting A's in every subject, but moderately successful. Go on to university and study drama or theatre studies. That you can probably expect. Okay. but it didn't happen that way. And I was distraught when I didn't get the grades that I did. And I think what I hadn't appreciated was that I kind of coasted my GCSEs a bit and then got to A-levels, didn't realise how much hard work that was going to be, and didn't want to put the work in, didn't want to put the effort in, because it felt like a lot like hard work. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be out with my friends, hanging out.
Yeah.
Doing social things. So fast forward a couple of years, what actually happened was I then was still living at home. And so after that point, my mum tried to encourage me to go through clearing and go to university anyway, but I was done with education. Nope, if you can't.
How old is you at this time?
18.
Okay.
So I'm done with education. It's not for me.
Was you working then at all? Any side jobs?
So I had a nice little part-time job in a retail store, so mm-hmm. in British Home Stores.
Nice.
And sort of turned up for my shift, did my shift, went home, wasn't really particularly interested in doing much more than that. And then my dad said to me, you can't just do that, because if you're going to live at home, you're going to pay rent. You can't just live off me for the rest of your life. Go and get a job. And I appreciate the fact that he did that, because had he not, then I don't think I would have ended up doing the hustle and being where I am now. So I started off with a company, stayed there for a couple of years, and they were great because they let me put into use my skills of being practical. They let me put into use the fact that I didn't really know much, and they had me just doing admin work of just putting things into computers. So people used to send us bits of paper for an order, and I then had to put the order into the computer and say, yes, it's been ordered.
That was still at British Home Stores?
No, so I'd moved to Parcelforce.
Okay, by that point. So a different industry.
Different industry entirely. Started studying on the side with them because they said, oh, we could get you, educated into a SIPS, so purchasing qualification. And I started doing that, but realised I still didn't like education. And it was the practical element of doing something that really appealed to me as an individual.
Felt like school again for you.
Yeah. And was just, I'm out. I'm not interested. Went off, did a couple of ski seasons in France. Really Lovely. Enjoyed that because, again, I got to use my practical skills. And as I found in a lot of times, they used me in various ways. So other people will come and do a specific role. They'll come out and be a chalet host. They'll come out and look after kids. So they'll be a nanny, for example. But when they took me on, they said, we don't really have an actual one job for you, so you're going to have to do everything. Okay, great, happy to do that. And that meant that I got a really broad experience. And I think some people would have found that quite uncomfortable because they like to know, I'm going to turn up at this time, I'm going to go home at this time, I'm going to have a lunch break for 30 minutes or whatever it might be. But I did split shifts. I was looking after kids. I'd never looked after kids. Didn't know what I was doing. I was 20.
I was going to say, how old are you at this time? You're 20.
Yeah, 20. So another 2 years old. Had no idea what I was doing, but quite happy to look after the kids, take them up to ski school, cook food. Again, I hadn't lived with anyone other than my parents. And yet there I was cooking for guests that are paying thousands of pounds for a ski week. It was a phenomenal experience. And I think from a life experience point of view, I'd recommend that for anybody, especially if, similar to me, education wasn't quite the right route, but you feel like maybe your teenage kids need a bit of education in life.
Yeah.
You get given a room not much bigger than where we are now, and you're sharing that with 4 or 5 other people. It's not a great living experience, but from the perspective of learning how to interact with multiple different types of people, coping in different languages. That's not to say I'm fluent in French, because I'm absolutely not.
I'm sure you know how to order wine, though.
Yeah, maybe. Puis je voir. So coming back from that, I then came into the mini recession that was around the dot-com bubble bursting. And so found it really difficult to get a job. So that would be 2002. So there's a mini recession going on. And after I was living at home with my parents again. So my partner was living in Birmingham or near Birmingham. So we were traveling up and down to see each other. Found it quite hard to get a job, but then ended up at Amazon and worked there for a year.
Okay.
In recruitment.
So that, is that when Amazon was quite new to the UK? Is this before, obviously, it boomed and it is what it is today?
Yeah. So two warehouses in...
That's all they had.
Yeah. Two houses in the warehouses in the UK, one in Milton Keynes, one in near Glasgow. And then they had some offices in Slough, of all places. I'm not quite sure why Slough, but probably close enough to London and yet far enough out that they weren't paying the rent, I would imagine.
Makes sense.
And again, I got pulled into doing something that I'd never done before. So I was doing recruitment for them, but looked at how we could actually do it properly, because we were recruiting vast numbers of people into a warehouse that, just for your information, was the same size as 10 football pitches.
Wow.
I can remember this as my pitch. It was the first time I was doing presentations to large groups of people. Most people couldn't speak English.
So this was a brand new role. You just applied for this role. This wasn't something that generally pulled towards you. You just thought, yeah, I'll try my hand at this. This company looks exciting to work for.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity, essentially.
Give it a go. And it was actually through somebody that I knew said, I know somebody that is looking for people. Do you want to come and do that? Yeah, sure. I'll give that a go. So I ended up doing that for a couple of years. And that got me into the world of recruitment, which for me was kind of a dream job. I love reading, and I would read all day if I could do. And if you think about recruitment, it's reading CVs and then actually applying, okay, well, this person fits over here, mm-hmm. or this person could do this or whatever. And it's trying to actually fit people across the piece.
Yep.
I don't like saying putting people in boxes because I don't think that's quite right, because different roles will do different things for people. But yeah, that's kind of what got me into recruitment, and that carried on my entire career. But it is also where I started my first side hustle when I needed a little bit of extra cash. Wasn't paid amazingly well at Amazon. Mm. I know that's shocking to hear. But started my first side hustle and joined into Virgin V, which was selling makeup. At the time, they don't exist anymore, but one of Richard Branson's companies.
Interesting.
So parties where you go and you sell makeup.
Like an Avon's pyramid scheme, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely not pyramid selling.
Not pyramids, no.
No. But absolutely was. so yeah, I love the fact that they somehow get away with not saying that it's pyramid selling, but in actual fact, it really is. So yeah, that was my first kind of experience of doing a side hustle and thinking about having extra money and how to manage that. Didn't worry about tax at that point. I do now, Mr. Taxman. But didn't worry because it wasn't a lot of money and it would have been under the threshold anyway because I wasn't earning a lot from my other job. So altogether, it wasn't gonna break the bank, if you like. But that started me thinking, you don't have to just be in one box.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to just do a 9-to-5 and do what everybody else does. And I think that's where I really started to think about, okay, well, what's different and how can I help people to feel different? And a lot of that was actually very simple makeup techniques for people, like I say, parties in their home. So they felt comfortable anyway because they're in their home or their friend's home or whatever, but trying to help people kind of, I guess, like I say, feel a bit better. And then fast forward a couple of years.
How old is you at that point?
24.
Okay.
Yeah, 24. So Mark, my partner and I were trying to save for a house, trying to pay towards, you know, mortgage and everything else, and trying to understand, you know, how can we actually, you know, make it work. He had a good job but was still travelling backwards and forwards to Birmingham. So we find a house that we like, and we put an offer into the mortgage, got accepted, which was great. And he then carried on travelling for another year and a half, which was quite hard because in those days you didn't work from home. Mm. So it was every day he was an hour and a half in the morning and an hour and a half in the evening. And so I didn't have things to do when he wasn't there. So it made it easy to have a side hustle because I could slot it into the time that he wasn't around. So yeah, made it a lot easier, I would say.
There's a few things that to pick apart there. So if we go back to the beginning, obviously the plan was, like you said, to go to university because mm-hmm. that's what everybody did in the 90s, right? That was
absolutely.
That's what you had to do. Fast forward now, 2025 is completely different. Kids can drop out whenever and start a business tomorrow and make more than you and I put together.
Mm-hmm.
So that must have been a challenge in itself, watching your friends go off on one direction to follow the path that everyone goes on, where you went against the grain.
Mm-hmm.
So that was your first sort of diversion away from what the normal should be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you went traveling and mm-hmm. went to the ski chalets, which is great. So that must have been where the first blend of you can be paid for something that you enjoy at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So then this is where you can start. I personally can see the marrying of the story coming together now. You can see how the personality that you are has grown into who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then we fast forward again, another couple of years where you then again go against the grain, where everyone has a 9-to-5 job and works for somebody, where I can have 2 or 3, 4. I don't have to sit in this box. I can venture out and do more.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see how. But that must have taken a lot of character, because it's easy to just go and say sit in that box, right? So mm-hmm. where do you think you pulled that from? Who was it? Was there someone in your life? Was it just you? Was it a parent? Was it a figure that you looked up to that made you think? Because obviously you're a grafter, mm-hmm. and that started from an early age. So where did that come from?
I think it probably, even though my dad did the same job for his entire life, he, in the sense of he worked for one company for a very long time, not his entire life, but for a very long time, he worked for British Telecom. And I think what he instilled in me was a hard work ethic to get what you want. So when I wanted something, he would make me work for it. So I had to clean.
You pay rent from an early age as well, right? Yeah. So quite important.
Yeah. And it wasn't.
No free ride here.
Yeah. There are no free ride here. If you want something, you work for it. So for example, before I was paying rent, it was, if you want to go on this school trip, which is not an educational thing, but more a social thing, like a ski trip, then you're going to pay for it by washing the cars, my car and your mum's car, every weekend for 6 months. Doesn't matter. It's cold outside, Dad. Don't care. Mm. And I probably didn't do an amazing job because I was only 14 when I was doing that. But it was making me understand to get something that I want, I have to work for it. Even when I don't want to work for it, I have to get out there. It's cold. Don't want to do it. It's raining. Don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Get out there. Get it done. Because that's the only way you're going to get to go skiing or you're going to get to go do your social thing. So understand that's how it works. My mum made us clean the house from a very early age. I think she had a bit of an emotional breakdown at some point when I was probably 13, 14. My sister was, about 15, 16. And I think we just kind of left dirty plates in our room, you know, doing what typical teenagers do, clothes on the floor, you know, that kind of thing. And she said, enough, I'm not having it. Every Saturday, there are four jobs in the house. You can hoover, dust, do the bathrooms or do the kitchen. And we're putting it on a rota. Everybody does it. And she didn't care if it was done well, in the sense of she just wanted us to do it to understand this is what I have to do on top of my job.
Yeah. So these are key fundamentals that were installed at you at such a young age that felt like essentially a ball ache at the beginning.
Yeah.
But they, coming from a working class family where they had 9-to-5 jobs, weren't entrepreneurial, mm-hmm. but they were integral jobs to make you realize that you need to do that to unlock that.
Mm-hmm.
But then there must have been, it's really easy for you to just follow in your parents' footsteps of staying 9-to-5. So again, where was the breakaway? Is it because you're now used to going against the grain? Where was the rebel side of you that came out that said, okay, I don't just want to work for Amazon. I'm ready to do multiple things. And because there's an entrepreneurial person breeding underneath that.
Yeah, I think that probably didn't really show its face until Mark and I started our IT business. So we'd done a photography business before that where we took wedding photography.
So that was a side hustle together.
Yeah. So okay. Our first side hustle together, we were trying to save money to pay off our wedding. So when we got married in 2007, we needed to pay off our wedding. And we didn't use our own idea. We pinched the idea from the photographers that did our wedding. So their thing was, and this is in the days before camera phones, you had nice little digital cameras, but you didn't have the camera phones available. So pictures took a time to be processed. Mm-hmm. You might see them on a tiny screen on a digital camera, but you didn't see them in the nice high resolution that you might get now. And what they did was they took the photos on the day and then they would print you an album by the evening.
Okay.
In with, I think it was 20 or 25 photos or something. So we took that idea, ran with it, and then just reproduced it. We didn't do anything different. We literally copied their idea because it was doing something different to what other photographers were doing. We charged a little bit less, but to get the custom. And then we worked out, okay, well, that's how we can do it by charging a little bit less. We still get money for that and we can put that
towards
things.
And how did you market that?
Well, we learned quite quickly. Mark was in IT and he was learning how to build websites on the side. That was his first side hustle, was building websites. So I think when you both do that kind of thing together, when you think, even if you're doing two different side hustles, your brains work like that and mm-hmm. you bounce off each other and you say, hey, this is a good idea. Hey, that's a good idea. And you start thinking about how you can do things in a slightly different way. Because I think a lot of people think you have to have a new idea. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a new idea. You just have to be the best at what you're doing. Be consistent at what you're doing. And that is how you will gain success.
Yeah. Absolutely. I definitely. So going back to Mark here. So you obviously shared the same interests, the same entrepreneurial mm-hmm. brains. So it's quite important having someone who you can obviously lean on, can obviously motivate you as well at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you both have that, you both still have that now, because mm-hmm. obviously you've bred into the people that you are now. So let's go past the Amazon mm-hmm. stage now, past the Richard Branson Virgin makeup stage. Mm-hmm. What happens next?
So we start, this is where we always start our story now for people now. So I don't normally go that far back.
This is the new chapter now.
Yeah, this is the new chapter.
This is the grown up Amy now. This is the married, the house.
Yeah.
I've done a few side hustles. Mm-hmm. I can see that I can earn a bit of extra cash here. It's mm-hmm. unlocking new things for me.
Absolutely. So
breaking ceilings almost in your head, right?
Yeah.
Limiting beliefs.
And I think people potentially... cool, say that they've got ADHD if they don't have good attention skills. So I've got good attention, but I get bored in a business as usual setting. So what I mean by that,
so 9-to-5 scenario,
9-to-5, if I had to go in and do the same thing every day, day in, day out, I'd be out within 5 seconds, because my brain does not work like that. My brain works with challenges. It works with, I've got something a bit odd, can you help me work out how we're going to get to the end route? And so when we started our IT consultancy business, we started off servicing customers, but we quickly worked out, we lost a couple of customers through one thing and another. There was a financial crash, so another financial crash. We lost our two biggest clients that we were servicing from an IT perspective. So we pivoted and changed into IT consultancy. So I launched Mark off into warehouse IT consultancy, and he went off to go and do that. And I carried on in the recruitment vein and started working for Virgin Active Health Clubs.
Okay.
Which started our passion for supporting people. That was probably the best ever employed job I ever had, because they taught me the importance of things like brand standards, consistency despite different locations. They taught me how to have fun whilst being at work. Mm. It wasn't stuffy. It was good fun. It was a great team, because we were all of a similar age. And when you're of a similar age, you're going through the same kind of life experiences outside of work. It makes it much easier to gel as a team or as a bunch of people, as a company, if that's actually what's happening in your life. So they taught us a massive deal about all sorts of things in the gym world. And that launched us into thinking about what we wanted to do for franchising, which still wouldn't come for another few years in between,
Okay. But
gave us a really good base of understanding of how that was going to work. In the meantime, I've got my dad passing away during that time. We've changed, we've pivoted from being IT services to IT consultancy. I got made redundant from Virgin Active, which really, really hurt. It was very painful.
What year was this in?
2011. Yeah, 2011. And that was really quite painful to be told, we're making a group of people redundant. If I look at it...
Because that's when Virgin Active were booming. From my memory, that's when I got into the industry just a bit before that, and they were almost the David Lloyd.
Yeah.
They were the first big gym.
Yeah. So they just bought Esporta. So I helped them do the transition from Virgin Active to Esporta from a recruitment and HR kind of perspective. And what they felt at the time was that I didn't have enough experience to look after the bigger company. So they brought in a guy to do that. And we tried to work together, and it just was never going to happen. I think a bit of immaturity from me, for sure, because I was, you know, like, well, I don't understand why you can't see me. And the guy I was working for at the time said, I think you can be good in the future, but I don't have time to help you right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, that sounds like a you problem, not a me problem, but you're making it a me problem. And that really hurt at the time. That's what they were saying. And I think if I look at it dispassionately now from a business perspective rather than a personal perspective, I can see they went across a salary line and said, here's 20 people that we want to get rid of because they're earning this amount of money. This is what it's going to get back.
Yeah.
And that also feels quite hurtful that you're a number. You never want to be a number, do you?
But the same stance now that you're almost in the same situation, you're now there. Mm-hmm. You know that unfortunately you have to take the human emotion out of these decisions sometimes. And yeah, no one wants to be a number. We don't want to look at people's numbers, but mm-hmm. you're now, you know, very successful business lady. So you understand maybe how that guy got to that decision now, right?
For sure. And I think when, I don't know about you, but the hardest thing I have to do as a manager, as an owner, you know, whatever, is letting people go. Mm. It doesn't matter whether it's through poor performance, whether it's through redundancy, whether it's through performance of the company or the individual. It's always the hardest thing emotionally that I ever go through as somebody who manages people or who has a team of people. I'm always, it doesn't matter, like I say, if it's poor performance or if they've been rude to me, mm. none of it matters. I can never quite get to the point of saying, it's okay, it's all fine because it's going to make the business better. I just don't work like that.
Yeah, I can agree there. I just want to go back a little bit again, because obviously the transition from not being in the fitness industry to, was the Virgin thing just again another opportunity that you saw? Hang on, that's it's still recruitment, but it's a different industry. I'm going to try my hand at that. Could it have been aerospace? Could it have been recruiting for doctors, banks? And then you just,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It could have gone any direction, right?
It could have been anyone.
It popped up at that time and you managed. And
it was the right opportunity at the right time. Springboarded
into fitness.
Yeah. So I'd taken voluntary redundancy from a previous company, and that's where the kind of seed fund that we used to put into the IT consultancy. And I finished that job on the Friday and then started this one on the Monday. So no gap in between, just went, yeah, okay, I'm into it. I'm straight into what I need to do. Mm. And I think that's where my brain goes, is I'm laser focused on what do we want? What are we trying to achieve here? Is it paying the mortgage, paying your bills, you know, all of those kind of things. And we've been in a position, especially when we were doing the IT services part of things, where I was thinking, I'm not sure we're going to make the payment this month, because paying your employees always comes first mm-hmm. in any business. And we had a few people working for us. It always comes first. You pay your people first and then worry about the rest later. And we were not at a, I'm trying to think of the right word, the financially astute point in our life where we could work out who we could pay and who we couldn't.
Yeah.
We automatically thought, well, we've got all these bills that need paying. We need to pay them all immediately. Whereas now we're much more open with, I don't know, maybe you say to the bank, oh, I'm going to pay the loan a couple of days late, or
cash flow management.
Yeah. It's thinking about how you do that. It's managing who you pay and when, and having your contracts on a monthly basis, not a quarterly or annual basis. So your money is even throughout the 12 months, rather than, oh no, we've suddenly got this amount of
panic
money to
stations,
pay.
Empty the bank account.
Yeah. Oh, mum, I need a loan. Dad, I need a loan. Bank, I need a loan. That's not a great position to be in, but it is a realistic position to be in when you own a business.
Yeah. So did you put yourself in debt to go into any businesses?
Yes. So we had a bit of cash because Mark was contracting, and contracting is quite lucrative. And so we saved a bit of money, put it into houses. So we bought a couple of houses and we're renting them out, but it didn't really float our boat. It just wasn't very interesting. So we didn't need to do anything.
Just passive, right?
Yeah. And it's kind of like, people are like, why would you not be happy with just an income that just comes through the door? Well, because I want to do something and want to be involved and want to know something about it. But what can you do with that?
So there's a key word there. There was no why behind it, right?
Exactly. Who am I helping by doing this? All right, I've got two houses and I'm helping people, you know, give them a space to live. But in reality, not so much. It just, yeah, like I say.
Yeah, your neighbour would do the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. If it was easy, everyone would do it. Yep. Is a great phrase. And buying a house and renting it out, I think quite a lot of people can do that. So we said, okay, well, we've got some money. We should do something else with it. We'd been scarred because we'd done our own business and it hadn't worked out the way we wanted it to, made people redundant from that, and then pivoted and changed. And so we started looking at franchises. We looked at things like McDonald's or Costa or Domino's, and none of them really spoke to us in terms of helping people. And I genuinely think that's what the basis was, because when you look at each of those businesses, great business models, and they work very well. And there's a reason that they work very well. They've got a good blueprint. They understand what franchising means. They understand how to look after people. But we felt what they were doing was actually hurting people. And this is where I sound a bit evangelical, but by creating a problem in terms of diabetes or being obese or, you know, sugar addiction or any one of those, any number of things, they are providing a service. I think we could definitely have a whole discussion on whether it's essential or not as a service, but they are providing some sort of service. So we found a fitness franchise that were very similar in terms of ethos to the Virgin Active kind of branding, if you like. So a friend introduced us to them and we started talking to them, and took us about 9 months to find our first location, and we bought into that and started our first business. We had no concept about how much that was going to take. Time, money, effort, none of that, because whilst the brand were trying to romance us, and I'm not saying they missold us, because I think that would be a misrepresentation of the facts.
There was a sales rep there essentially trying to buy you into the concept, right?
For sure. And it's, come and meet these people because they're great franchisees. And you're like, oh, great. And you meet the good people, but you don't meet the so-called bad people from the franchise perspective.
Can we see the ones that at the bottom of the list instead, please?
Exactly. And that would have been a really smart thing to do. Because we then borrowed money to make sure. So we used capital and then we borrowed money from the bank. And so that put us down by about £200,000 to start with. And the numbers that they showed us did work initially. So they said, you know, it's going to take you 2-3 years before you're going to see a return. And that is fairly standard, and we were fine with that. We knew that that was what's going to happen. There's always a risk with any business that you do. It doesn't matter whether you open a pitch and putt or a coffee shop or join a franchise. There is risk associated because you're putting money into something. You've got no idea what's going to happen in the future. But they were selling them for, you know, they were selling each unit for a decent amount. So we got our first one in 2016 in Stratford-upon-Avon. I was doing the tour at the time. Mark was contracting. So we kind of pinballed between the two of us. So we're both still contracting.
Had two jobs essentially running, right?
Yeah. So I'd started with a software consultancy and was contracting with them. I stayed with them 7 years. So the longest I've ever been with any one company, but was contracting with them, doing various different things for them over the years. I'll come back to them in a minute and just talk about the franchise for the moment. But yeah, walked into this warehouse. There was, we always say, with Barry the dead bird, because there was a nice dead bird mouldering away in the corner of this warehouse. It was empty. And it was just, it just looked really shoddy. But it had great natural light through the skylights that were permanent fixture of the building. And I just knew that that was going to be a game changer for us, because whilst it was just a big empty box that we could do something with, I knew the fit out company could make that look amazing and understand that it was gonna be amazing. And it is, and it looks so different to what it started as. Excuse me. But then we kind of got involved and we'd already bought another couple of territories, as they called them. We looked at another couple of buildings.
So how many years was you in before you started looking at the second one?
So we opened the second one 18 months after the first.
Because the first 18 months was successful?
They went to the plan that we... So we initially thought we knew better than the franchise and other people advising us in the franchise. Funny enough, they knew better because they'd done it before. And you might want to think about that when you go in a franchise. Great to be entrepreneurial, but also listen to the experience that someone's trying to give you. Because once we did that, oh yeah, this works. We can understand, we can see how this works, and you can see the building blocks. So we didn't open on great numbers. We could have opened better. But then I would always say that, and I'd always think, oh, we could have done this better. Because if you reflect on it and look back, you think, I would have done something different there, or I would have thought about doing something different.
But I'm guessing there must have been a lot of guidelines and rules that you had to follow. Because essentially, if it's a franchise, right, there must be some really strong, you have to stick to this color theme, this branding, this, it has to be a certain way to fit in, right?
Yeah, the bumper rails are there to stop you going off course.
McDonald's looks the same in every, or a Costa or Starbucks looks the same, has the same menu in every town for a reason, right? Because you know what to expect.
Exactly.
So I guess the same applies in your space.
I would say 80% of it is there. So 80% of it, if you went into any facility, would look and feel the same.
Same kit, same companies.
Not even the same kit, because they've got three different suppliers. Okay. But it was a bit more cowboy when we first started, in the sense of there were only two main suppliers and you could play them off against each other in terms of price and what it looked like. And I think the now you've got more suppliers, so actually that's not going to work as well, because you could go into one and see Precor, for example, and then another you might see, I don't know, Hammer Strength or Lifetime or whatever. So you'll see different stuff actually happening in each of those. There's also, they've gone through a rebranding exercise, so they've gone to a different colour palette and a different style, so we've had to upgrade during that time as well. We've had to deal with competition during that time. And yes, there are, again, they're bumper rails, but there's still quite a lot that you are, there's that 20% that you are left to your own devices to get on and deal with it.
So the important piece is money. When it comes down to how much you charge,
yeah,
are you in charge of that or are they in charge of that?
We're in charge of that.
So you can charge whatever you want?
Yep.
Literally whatever you want?
Yep. So you have to consider where you are in the market. And we've toyed with price. We went into a price war, which we should absolutely not have done, with a budget gym.
Okay.
And that is a quick race to the bottom, because you are devaluing what your offer is by doing that.
Absolutely.
Yes, a little bit of tweaking on your pricing is fine, but if you keep chipping away at it, then that is affecting your bottom line, which then means, actually, I can't afford to pay my staff. I can't afford to pay my electricity bill.
Repairs.
How am I? Exactly.
More kit, expansions. So you then,
yeah. So then you end up having a facility that looks crap for your members. And that's not what we were about. Again, it's people. People will make or break your business. And if you focus on the right people and look after them, then you get a really good business model. We've got a great guy at the moment who is fantastic in terms of, oh, I've got this new idea for revenue income. Fantastic. Let's talk about it. And he will get out there and he will do things. He'll motivate the team. He knows what he's talking about. He's been in the industry a long time, versus we've had other people managing the team who don't really understand why you need people to come along the journey with you versus against you. And so thinking about, how do you motivate those people and what do you do in an environment where you are not with them every day? So how do you motivate those people? We're quite lucky that we're able to do it individually. Whereas if we had 25 people that all worked for us directly, we would have to think about something else. But it's rewarding people. It's, for example, COVID was a fun time in the gym industry. Mm-hmm. Fun time. So we were shut more than we were open during 2020 and 2021. And that really hit us hard on the bottom line. COVID loans from the government, so recovery loans.
So you took those, you had bounce back loans.
Yeah.
The grants that were handed out.
Grants.
Furloughed staff members, obviously, yeah.
Had people on furlough and trying to motivate them.
Was there any kind of online pivoted service?
We tried. So Mark and a couple of the other franchisees created, and it's still on Facebook more than anything else, but Facebook and Instagram, they created an online platform. So we had all of the trainers around the country, if they wanted to join in, were able to kind of put a timetable together. So all of our members were able to access that. And in the end, we did it for free. So the first month of COVID, when we were first shut, we were kind of like, oh, members wanted to pay us because they wanted to keep us open.
Yeah.
But the longer it went on, the more people were kind of like, yeah, it's not really, you know, I can't really keep paying you. And we stopped it, I think, after the 6 weeks, I think it was 6 to 8 weeks. So definitely by the second month.
You reached out to the members and said, we're ceasing payments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because.
And can you remember how many members you had at the time then?
So over both sites, we had 3,000 altogether.
And then when you came out the other side, how drastic was the drop?
It was less than 50%. Less than 50, but more than 40, but less than 50. So our teams had a hard slog to get them back to where we wanted to.
So and you kept all of your members of staff?
We changed.
Because we're talking nearly 2 years of COVID, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
People forget how long
COVID
actually was. It was a long time ago now, but it was 2 years.
And for different industries, it was different times.
And ours, both being fitness, was the longest.
Absolutely.
Which is ironic when it's the one thing that could,
that could actually have helped you. So we said to the teams, we need you to get back to there as quick as possible. So what we're going to do is we're going to lay it down and take you to Ibiza, 3 days, 3 nights, all inclusive. We'll pay for everything. So from your flights to your accommodation, to your travel, to your drinks when you're out there. I said, the only things I'm not paying for are drugs and hookers. Everything else is on the table. So no drugs, no hookers, but everything else is good. I'll do that when you get to that number. That's my promise to you.
Okay.
Because we knew if you look at a bigger picture, if your membership number's there, your bottom line is here. You know that that's what's coming in every month. You know what you can afford. And we were still in debt. We were still paying off. We were trying to negotiate with landlords to not pay rent or as much rent because we hadn't been using the buildings. They're wanting us to pay. The bin company wants us to pay.
Because when you think about that, they still have to pay the banks. They still have to pay their bills. Mm-hmm. So the chain that goes down is everyone's trying to put off payments, but they still have people to pay as well, right?
Yep. I think some of the good things that the government did during that period was they made it so landlords, commercial landlords, couldn't kick you out if you couldn't pay your rent.
Yeah.
And that certainly helped us. And we certainly didn't. We said to the landlord, we just cannot pay you for a couple of months.
Did you know your landlord personally?
We knew one of them and the other one is a big corporation. So they're part of the BBC pension trust. So we can't really get hold individual.
There's no direct line there.
No, there really isn't. And they manage it through a third party. And so, it's very convoluted. But the team pulled together because they had a common goal. They knew what they were going to do.
So you created community within your house.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing other franchises could either lent in and did the same and others didn't, right? Because I think the fitness industry, part of it died throughout COVID and then part of it lived on and grew stronger than ever. And by the sounds of it, you came out swinging, you pivoted during, came out swinging, kept your team together, highly incentivized them, getting back on top and created that community of your current members, but more so the team that the ones that are going to service those members in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And that's where it's important to be consistent. So consistency for your team, one common goal. And that was really simple for us. Not every business is going to say that to their teams and it's not suitable for every business. But if you have one common goal, then people are going to work towards that common goal.
Yeah.
You make it complicated with, we've got seven values and then we've got four pillars under each of these seven values. And then to make up those four pillars, people were like, what are you talking about? I don't understand. Give them a framework to work around. And again, something I learned from Virgin Active, give them one common goal and work towards that. And that is how you get cohesiveness within your team. You have the right people that work for you, you're on to a winner. Mm. So yes, we came out swinging. Then a budget operator moved in to our initial location and really went for us in a big way. They moved in probably 200 yards, 300 yards down the road from us.
So I know for a fact that they do that on purpose. They send people out purposely to go and find locations because they know people already flock there, right? So they know they're going to potentially take 50% of your members before they've even opened their doors and taken the stickers off the windows.
Yeah. And our initial strategy, right, let's do a spruce up, which is what we did. We moved into that second generation new branding that I talked about earlier. Our manager was tired and so she decided she wanted to move on, which was sad for us.
Did she move there?
No, she didn't, thankfully. She still actually teaches for us, which is great. But I helped her coach her into her job that she does now because she wanted to move out of the gym industry, but wanted to move into something parallel. So I helped her move into her new job, despite, and people might think I'm mad, but she was ready to move on. And had she stayed, that relationship would have broken down.
Yeah.
And that wasn't what was best for her. And then it wouldn't have been what was best for us. So in terms of helping her, that was absolutely the best of both worlds. Because like I say, she still comes in. She gives us honest feedback about what's happening in the club, which is great because she'll tell us exactly how it is. So we know when things are going well and when they're not actually going quite so well. And that helps me understand what we need to do and what we need to change. So she left. We got a new manager in. Our regional manager also left a similar time a couple of months later. And again, he's gone to a bigger job with an entertainments company where he now looks after multiple acts and does all sorts of things, interesting things for Butlins.
Okay.
So yeah, he's got a fantastic job now, which I'm very, very happy for him. Sad for us, happy for him. So we got a new manager. He didn't work out. On reflection, he was young, and I think we were reflecting on him that he was passionate and that he would have the same interest and investment as that team that we had straight out of COVID. He didn't. We didn't spend enough time with him. And I think there, you always have to look at something. When an employee doesn't work out, what would you have done differently?
Mm-hmm.
How can you how could you have changed that experience for them and for you?
Yeah.
Would you have done things differently, or actually did you do what you thought you would do? And I think that's what I would say is we didn't spend enough time with him to tell him this is the way we do things around here. This is what my expectation is, and consistently say the same thing, you know, again and again. So he didn't work out. Unfortunately, we started doing the price chipping. So that was our race to the bottom. And since This time last year, we brought a new guy on, and it's now started. The line started probably around September, October. So it took him a few months to turn things around, to change things, to change the environment for the people that were working there, to change the team a bit.
Yeah.
So we lost some other people because he said, they're not good enough. They're not going to work for me. That's fine. You're the boss. And we just got out of his way. And for him, that was the best thing.
And consequently for you, that's also the best thing, right?
Yeah, fantastic.
There's two big things there that I think are really important, and you can see that feeds into your personality. Is you always put your team first. You look after your members of staff, which I'm big into understanding people and teams. It's a role that I've grown into as well myself. And coming from a professional sport background, looking after teams is really important. So you put your team forwards first all the time so they can perform for you when they go out on a Sunday and win the game, right? And then the other really important thing that I see there that a lot of people don't do is when someone's wings are ready to expand and fly away, you don't clip them.
Mm-hmm.
You open the door and let them fly away and let them go on to something better. And I think that's really important because a lot of people don't do that in business. They hold on to that person because they don't want to lose that person, because then the job falls back onto your shoulders and makes your life harder.
Mm-hmm.
But you see that because you put your people first, that let's not clip the wings, let's let that person go on to something better. And it's time for you to then step in and progress in a different direction.
Yeah. And I think that's because other people have done that with me as well.
Yes, there must have been an experience in your life where...
For sure.
You had a negative experience where you potentially were treated badly and shat on.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was an experience where you might have had someone who did that to you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then you realised what kind of boss, owner, manager you wanted to be.
Absolutely. And I think we always have a team that are fairly young, partly because it's the industry, partly because of the pay.
Mm.
So I'm not going to tell you I'm the best payer in the world. I'm absolutely not.
But we're in the fitness industry and it's a hard industry.
It is competitive in the fitness industry in terms of the money that we pay, but it typically attracts people that are younger because of that amount of money.
Yeah.
And so you have to think about, the interesting thing for me is it's not, you can't just control people by whipping them and saying, which we were saying earlier, 9 to 5, get on with it, work harder, do more. That's not what's going to motivate people to actually do more for you.
There's a boss and a leader, right? Two very different things. The boss is the one who stands at the back with the whip.
Mm-hmm.
The leader is the guy at the front who's got hold of it saying, come on, come and jump on with me. And you sound like you're leading rather than bossing.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. Would I say that everybody who's ever worked for me would say that? No, I don't think so.
But again, you've grown in that period in the past 10 years, 7 years, 5 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can look back over your shoulder every year and see that you've personally grown as a boss, an owner, manager, whatever you identify yourself as. So of course, everyone's going to have a better experience of you as you get, as you progress too.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And I think I give myself a hard time again when people don't work the way I can see their potential could get them to work.
Mm-hmm.
That always affects me because I think, well, what could I have done again? What could I have done differently to change that experience for them to get them to the point of potential? And a lot of it comes down to time and structure. So when you are part of a bigger organization, you will typically have a training function, won't you? A learning and development function that will do all of that for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's the challenge is when you are a smaller business, how do you do that? And one of the things that we definitely learned, so that one of the businesses I didn't talk about was just before COVID, we started a telephone answering service. So we were in Bletchley Park, which is not very far from us.
Mm-hmm.
They had an entrepreneur hub where they had lots of different businesses. And we thought what we can do is start a telephone answering service that will not only do inbound, but outbound sales. Again, nothing that other people haven't done before, but we were going to focus on the gym industry because that's what we knew. We had a very good pipeline. We had a very good method. We had a very good regional manager that was looking after both of our clubs at that point. Started it, got 5 clients within the first 2 weeks. Fantastic, going really well. Oh, hello, COVID.
No need for you anymore.
No need for us anymore because we went niche early on because we hadn't anticipated that. I mean, who did anticipate COVID? But we hadn't anticipated that as a challenge. Now, every time we do something or think about a new idea, is it COVID proof? What would happen if COVID happened again today? What would we be able to do? Podcast immediately, we can take it online.
Yeah,
that's fine. I can carry that on. What can we do with the gym? Okay, again, we can do online classes immediately. You can pivot both of those, but you've still got the building in relation to the gym business that you have to pay, and the electricity and water and all of those kind of things, and the bin people who apparently, even though they're not collecting the bin, still want you to pay them.
Of course,
for collecting, no bins.
Yeah. Well, again, that goes, you flip this back and you look at the personality trait that you have, you're very self-reflective. And I know you and Mark very well. And I see that in both of you. You have that trait. So even when you lose a member of staff, you're self-reflecting on what could I have done better? How could I have helped that person better? Even you reflecting on how can I make this next business COVID-proof?
Mm-hmm.
That's all self-reflection. That's all self-development. That is you progressing as an owner and as a leader, as you go through the years of business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can see that all of it has been just one huge journey from start to finish. I want to go just quickly back to the price point with your with your gym, if that's okay. So sure. You said you raced to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Have you raced back to the top, or are you still down there fighting with them?
Oh no, we're absolutely much more expensive than they are.
So
now
you've pivoted and changed the business. So would you now classify yourself not as a budget gym?
I would say we were mid-market. For that town, we're definitely mid-market. It's interesting that some of the other independent operators in the town did nothing to change their pricing, which makes you wonder how they're funding their gyms. But that aside,
different question.
Yeah, some interesting thoughts there. But that aside, we actually now charge more than the budget operator over the road. And we're confident in it. Our team are very confident in it. And 9 out of our 10 joiners are from that budget operator over the last 4 months.
Because I think everyone likes shiny and new. Everyone's a magpie. When something shiny opens up, everybody's head will turn.
Yeah.
It's human nature. People want to go and see if the grass is greener. And then they go into where the grass isn't greener and go, actually, it looks nice and shiny for the first week, but it's too busy.
It's too busy.
I can't get in. I can't do what I want to do.
Yeah.
It's full of low budget. And I mean, it's in the nicest way, low budget people.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't be long until they come running back to you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So with your price point, when was the point that you charged the most? Have you dropped from there? What's the most you've ever charged there?
Back to that now. So we're at $37.95.
So you're back to there. So that's the best news has come from this.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the way we've done that is we did a bit of a spruce up in the autumn. So again, you know, a year on from when we did our original kind of revamp, we just did a bit of a spruce up, changed the floor, put some wall art on the wall and created a posing room.
A posing room.
Yeah, people love it.
People like to go into the mirrored rooms, yeah.
Yeah, people love it. We've got the mirrors up. We've got some little plants in there. People go and take their pictures and post them on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
For us, fantastic.
Free marketing.
Free marketing. And that it was just asking our team, what can we do? What's gonna change the game here in this town for us?
Yeah.
And they said, a posing room. Okay, great. Let's get it done. Because they're in that business every day.
Yeah.
They're the same age as most of our members. They understand what people in that market want. Go for it.
Because the way I look at the fitness industry is it's ever changing and it's ever growing. Mm-hmm. And I come from obviously small independent and my services are a lot different to what you would do. But when I look at the gyms like yours, especially throughout COVID times, as it has changed, the landscape has changed quite quickly. Some of the gyms have pivoted and changed and recognized the patterns and the trends in the industry and have reinvested. And then others have just stayed still.
Mm-hmm.
I know, obviously, your franchise is one. There's other franchises out there. And I can see how they die. Mm-hmm. I can see how they don't change. The budget one you've spoken of, they have sat back. They obviously own more gyms than anyone else in the entire country. And they purposely put themselves next to people like you,
mm-hmm.
but they've stepped back, zoomed out and said, well, what direction is this going in? Functional fitness is massive.
Mm-hmm.
Treadmills cost a fortune.
Yep.
What should we do here? Do we stay where we are? Or do we grow? And they've pulled it all out, reinvented it. And they're constantly doing that
mm-hmm.
where obviously they're huge. There's hundreds of them and they're not franchisable, are they?
No.
So it's not like it's not, they have a huge bucket. They have a huge bucket of money to pull from
mm-hmm.
where you don't have that opportunity. So it's for you, I guess, if you want to draw outside the lines, if you're allowed to, it's for you to move with them or be killed, right?
For sure. And
so how much leeway do you have being a franchisee to do that?
Yeah. And I would say it gets more limited rather than less limited as we go. So I can create my own fitness offering in my clubs. I can do whatever I like, whether I have personal trainers on payroll or if I have them self-employed. I can create a fitness journey for people. So all of that is up for grabs, if you like. There are some basics that have to be done in a particular way, but ultimately I can create a fitness world, if you like. So one of our personal trainers is Hyrox affiliated. Mm-hmm. And so she's doing Hyrox training. Fantastic. That works really well because that's a massive
current trend.
For that age group as well. So our age group is typically 18 to 35. There are obviously outliers, but that's the majority of our age range. So you have to look at the trends in that age group. And what's interesting now is that there are more people wanting to spend time in the gym than go out drinking.
Oh, yeah.
Partly because they don't have the money, but also partly fitness is a big thing, much bigger than when I was that age. It definitely wasn't even really a thing. And if you said you were going to the gym, people thought you had to be training for a marathon.
Or you go to Keep Fit classes.
Yes.
Right?
Go to aerobics.
Your mum would go to aerobics class on the step of some little dumbbells, or you'd do a workout on a TV with a tape recorder, right? I talk about this all the time with my guys, how again, it's completely changed. And I think COVID has almost been, as negative as it was, has been positive for so many reasons mm-hmm. because we lost one of the most basic human needs is to be together.
Mm-hmm.
We are pack animals, we're supposed to live together. So when we were suddenly segregated, not allowed to leave our house, and unfortunately, if you lived in an apartment the size of this, you lost that human interaction. So mm-hmm. yeah, people don't want to spend money on alcohol and mm-hmm. going out anymore. Nightclubs are dying. They died throughout COVID as well, just like the gyms did, but they never revived. They never got back to it. So many people I see now that are in their 18 to 25 bracket that are spending more money on running trainers and Hyrox tickets and going for a run club and having a coffee afterwards. That's the new social dynamic, which I think is fantastic,
mm-hmm.
but it is definitely the way it's going. So like we look at Reforma Pilates. So that's obviously got this huge spike as well. So do you have the ability, if you wanted to, being a franchisee, to go, I want to make that studio over there into Pilates?
Yeah, absolutely. You can do that. Yeah. So you have to think about the percentage of people that are doing the classes and how you do things. And do you have a business within a business? So could you put a coffee shop in to your business?
That's one of the other questions. Are you allowed to do that?
You could if it was in your lease agreement, okay, but you wouldn't brand it the same. It would be a different brand, if you like, but you could do things like that. And that, I think, is where you have to think about complementary businesses, because classes only make up 6% of our membership base.
Really?
So when we think about that, they're normally the first thing to go when we're trying to save money. But actually, again, we worked out that when
instructor fees.
Exactly, yeah. So external instructors coming in charge typically £25 an hour. And if they only get one person attending a class, then for us, that's a no-brainer to cut that class. But when, again, you look at other operators that are charging per class, even if you just say, we've got classes, they're free, even if people don't go to those classes, it's like when gyms say, oh, we've got a pool, and people are like, oh yeah, I've got to go to a gym with a pool. And they never use the pool.
No one uses
the pool. If you look at the percentage of members that use a pool in a gym, I think it's something like 15 to 20%. And the rest of them never go into the pool unless the sauna's there. That's it. And that is because people have a perception of, I need this. But in reality, they don't actually go to classes and they'll go and get their pump on, or they'll
like
do whatever.
They like to know it's there in case they want it.
Exactly. And they want to know that they're getting value for money. Why am I paying extra?
Yeah.
Somebody was telling me that in the budget operator, the yoga instructor no longer wanted she was a freelancer, no longer wanted to work there because she was having to stand there with her pay machine.
Really?
As people were coming into the yoga class. Now, from a person that does yoga, that's not the right...
No, that's not the right environment you want to create.
That is not the experience that you want to create for those members when they're going into, I need to go into a nice class where I'm going to stretch, I'm going to work hard, but it's supposed to be a relaxing, calming environment. It's not supposed to be a, oh, hold on, I need to find my phone and pay as I go through the door. Doesn't work.
No. They're blurring the lines of what they're trying to do, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Niche down a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you have to think about every step of the experience way, but you can't just think about it from your point of view, because you and I would both be uber critical of every part of that experience. Oh, I can see a leaf on the floor. Oh, the whole experience is ruined. But in reality, 9 out of 10 people, we're not going to see that leaf on the floor. And actually, it's okay. We can. But as soon as you start letting the small standard go, multiple other things happen.
Yeah. So I've got a couple of questions before we move on to future, Amy.
Mm-hmm.
So looking back on everything that's come and gone so far, do you have any regrets? Is there anything that you would have done differently? Any advice you would have given or you would give to anybody else on this similar journey? Not necessarily in the fitness industry. It could be, because obviously this podcast is designed to talk to anyone from business or anyone who's entrepreneurial, whether you have a business or you want to start one. So advice that you would give to somebody, mistakes that you've made that you wish you could change, or were they there for a reason?
I like to think, I certainly wouldn't be who I am today without having made those mistakes. And I think sometimes, regardless of what people tell you, you will make mistakes, because life is like that. We cannot anticipate every single thing that's going to happen in our life. For example, COVID, no one could have anticipated that was going to happen. What I think I would always say to people is, have more money than you think you need. Take the loan. Don't be afraid to be in debt when you have a business.
That was a question I missed out, because I touched on it and then I forgot to follow it up, because debt is a big one, right? Lots of people they're fearful of having debt, where any successful person I've ever spoken to who has businesses that do really well, they're like, get debt, put it on the bank.
Yeah, stick it in the bank.
Like you said, you'd rather have the money there or not be able to pay your bills and your staff.
Yeah. So I always think about where you want to be in 12 months' time. So imagine I was starting something today. In 12 months' time, whatever it might be, let's say it's an office-based business. I want to have a building, a space, and I want to have 25 people working for me. What does that look like in money terms? Even if I'm only going to start with me and one other, if by the end of 12 months I want 25 people, how much money do I need in the bank to pay those people, the rent, the electricity, so on and so forth? And you can get a rough idea. Mm-hmm. And then know, okay, well, that's what I need in the bank from day one. Because if I don't have that, then to get there will seem an uphill battle. Whereas if I have that from day one, even if it's an overdraft or a loan or whatever it might be from the bank, actually you've still got that cash flow, because there are unexpected things that suddenly come and bite you on the butt that you just think, ah, yeah. The rent always, it surprises me how many people still pay rent either quarterly or annually or even mid-year, rather than say to the landlord, can I pay every month? Because if you pay every month, you know what's going out of your bills, rather than being smacked every 3 months and saying, oh God, I've got to find the rent now for this month, as well as pay the people, as well as pay the electricity, as well as. Well, actually, let's think about where you want to be in 12 months, get the money now. Because I've been in cash flow situations where we've had to say to our parents, please, can you loan me some money? The bank aren't going to give me any more. I just need it to pay the people or to do this one thing.
Yeah.
Please give me some money.
Can I have it for 3 days, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it can be like, I just need it for a week.
Yeah.
And then I'll give it back to you. Because sometimes it is like that.
Mm.
And especially in a recurring revenue business, you know when your money's coming in. So you can legitimately say, I can pay you back on this day because I know I'm getting the money on this day.
It says that.
Yeah. So I'm lucky enough that I've got family that I've been able to do that with. But we have, as I said, in it, the recovery loans, the bounce back loans, you know, all of that through COVID, we took advantage of that for sure. That's what you need to do as a business owner. Don't be shy about it, but don't put it against you, and don't secure your house or your mortgage against that loan.
Big tip.
Find something else to secure it, equipment, buildings, but not your home. Because if you do that and it all, for whatever reason, goes to pot, there's another pandemic, whatever, they're coming after your house.
Mm.
And that's you and your family that are then out on the street. And that's not okay.
A vital piece of advice from Amy for anyone who's starting out.
I think so. It's key.
I'll hold my hands up. We made that mistake with our first leases. They're in my name. They're in our names.
Mm-hmm.
Not, and was one of the first things we need to change when there's a rent review. My account's like, that needs to change.
Yep.
What was you thinking? But we didn't know.
You didn't know.
Because there wasn't people like you now sitting on a sofa saying, do this, avoid this, be careful of that.
Yeah. You don't know what you don't know. It's like thinking about if you have two locations or two different businesses, stick them into two different limited companies. Because if you want to sell one, getting that out of the company is harder than by doing it as a share sale.
Mm.
But if you do a share sale, you have to sell the whole business.
Okay.
So if otherwise you have to do an asset sale, and believe me, I'm going through that at the moment and it takes months.
So that's breaking everything.
Yeah, exactly. You have to take out all the procedures and everything that's happening. You have to split everything out and say, you know, make sure that people know it's this one location, but not this other location. And something will go wrong with it, I'm sure, in terms of telling all of those suppliers that this is what we're doing. So yeah, it's those are the key things. Look after your money and it will come back to you.
Okay. And then one last question on past before we move on to future. If you could tell that 18-year-old Amy who flunked her GCSEs and her A-levels, if you could go back and give that little girl one more piece of advice, what would you say?
Take the opportunities, which I think is what I have done. But in all seriousness, take the opportunities and enjoy it, because I've always been the person when I've been employed or contracting or whatever that people will come and say, I've got this, it's not in your job description, but can you just help me work out how we're going to do it? Because I'm good at colouring in between the lines. You'll tell me, this is where we need to get to. Great, I'll come up with a plan, boss, and I'll create it for you and I'll make it happen for you. Because that's what I know how to do, is take the opportunity and enjoy it.
Yeah. You posted a quote yesterday on Instagram, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. One of my favorite books. So it sounds like you've been very fearless from the beginning and you've just taken on any challenge that you could, just purely out of having no fear. Take on those opportunities.
I don't know whether it's without fear. It's just knowing, I think, what's good.
Bravery to back yourself potentially.
Yeah. I think there's an element of confidence there that I'm kind of like, I have a very secure family unit. So it's me and my husband. I know he backs me 100%. I've got zero doubt about that, and I never have. And so that creates a sense of security for me. We don't have children, so it means that the risk for us is just us. And so if everything went to pot tomorrow, it's just us that we need to pick up. And we know we've got such confidence in each other that actually we can make it through anything. We'll do it and we'll survive. And again, our strong family unit around us, like I say, lent us money, advice. His dad is an entrepreneur. So his dad had his own business from a very young age and did very well with it. And again, you know, he's very motivating and inspiring. He would never think that he was. So I'll make sure that I share with this little tidbit with him.
Absolutely.
From a grafting point of view, he is a hard grafter. And that, again, is prevalent across all of our parents. They're hard workers.
It's a point of reference.
Mm-hmm. Mm. For sure.
Amazing. So, future Amy, this is obviously new. Podcast is here.
Yep.
What's your problem? So tell us, what does the future look like?
So we're currently selling the franchise units, which is quite exciting. We're going to not make money on those, which is not exciting. And the reason that I say that is because had I sold them pre-COVID, they would have been worth a lot more. Now there's a lot more competition in the market. And so they are not the unique unicorns that they perhaps once were. So they're worth a lot less money, which is a shame. But equally, I wouldn't change the experience. Would I change some of the points on the way? I'd love to have changed some of those points where I thought, I'm not going to be able to pay the team this month, or I'm going to have to make people redundant. This is not a nice place for us to be. I do not want to feel like this. When you own your own business, it's hard.
Mm.
Hard, hard, hard. It's so much harder than you think it's going to be, because you are your boss. You have to answer to yourself.
Self-motivate.
The discipline that that requires. And again, I think that's quite good because I do a lot of what I do with Mark, so my partner. And I think because of that, it's good because when one of us is feeling, I just can't move forward through this. I don't understand which direction. The other person's like, right, okay, come on, let's work it out. So it's good to work with your partner. That's my experience. We've certainly been up and down in terms of being successful in our marriage as well as being successful when we're working. And we've had points where we've been screaming at each other, probably about some domestic thing, and then gone in and done a pitch to somebody for our IT consultancy business and aced it and won it. And they thought we were the most nicest people in the world because we can switch it on when we need to.
Yeah.
But that's what works. So I think in terms of future and what I want to do, or what our problem is right now, is what do we do next? Do we pause? Do we continue on? Is there something else? And I think I'm at a point of thinking, I would like to do something with other people. I don't know what that looks like yet, but I want to help people realize their dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying I'm a big investor with loads of money to invest, but what I do want to do is work out how I can exchange my time for money to help people realize their dreams.
Yeah.
And this being the start of it.
I think that's awesome, because we briefly spoke off camera about opportunities that are here today that weren't yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, when you was 18, when you was 20, 20, 25, even throughout your 20s,
mm-hmm.
we spoke about social media wasn't really in existence. There was Facebook that was just merging, you know, 20 years ago now. So we didn't have podcasts. We didn't have people like you sat here on a sofa, where today we have mentors, we have Diary of a CEO, we have Simon Squibb, who you've recently gone on and pressed the doorbell on. We've had these opportunities, right? So those who don't know, Simon Squibb came to Milton Keynes, parked his van up, and Amy bravely went there and pressed the doorbell and spoke about her dream, which is this podcast. So in terms of opportunities that are here now and weren't yesterday, what's your thoughts on those, and how easy is it to actually go out and create something today and where it wasn't maybe 10, 20 years ago?
Mm-hmm. I think now you have opportunity, like say in multiple places, when people are going through education, I think they have different choices now, but I still think education is not fit for purpose in the UK specifically, because that's what I know. And what I mean by that is I don't think we're teaching people to be good human beings through school. We're teaching them to learn and then be able to parrot that information. So, you know, maybe that's my lived experience of not being great at exams. But in all seriousness, we're teaching some people are great at writing things down and remembering things. Other people are not great at remembering things and writing them down, but they're great at the doing of those things. So how do we help people now understand what do you want to do? How do we help them understand halved graft? You think about majority of people with children, teenagers. So each of those teenagers got a tablet, a mobile phone, a laptop or a computer. We had one computer in my house when I was growing up, and that was just because my dad got it for free from work. People, I think, now are being taught that that is a right to have multiple ways of communicating, of doing things. Fantastic from a business perspective, but also a real danger from a business perspective, because you can be contacted on, let's say, five social media platforms, just to give as an example, plus email, plus telephone, plus WhatsApp. You know, you're talking eight different mechanisms for people to contact you, versus when we first started in the fitness industry, it was really
leaflets, maybe.
Yeah. Leaflets and telephone, and that was it. So it's great, but you have to harness it and understand you don't have to be switched on 24/7 as a business owner. You don't, and have healthy boundaries to understand I'm not going to answer things after 9 o'clock at night or before 6 in the morning. You can worry about things because that's the state of a business owner, but think about how you are going to limit that to behave for your life balance, because if you don't balance it, it will take over your life.
Yeah, I love that. Great way to end, you think?
Coming up next, we have Jake Wilkins from the Game Changer Training. but we've also got Louise Tattersall from Bodylight MK. And we've got some other exciting entrepreneurs and small business owners all lined up. We've got about 8 guests lined up for the next couple of months. You can expect 2 episodes a month and maybe more in the future. We'll see how we get on. And if you want to come on the podcast, drop us a line.